Okay, welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz with Clifford Carnicom. Tonight we're talking about aerosol spraying, otherwise known as chemtrails, over your head and in your lungs, in your nose, in your eyes, and in your family as well. There is a very excellent report we got, I guess about 2 months ago now. I've got it on a homepage at Rentz.com on the left-hand side under Features. It's called Debunking Chemtrail Debunkers. Very intelligently written. And for you skeptics out there, I would urge you to take a close look at that. Got a couple of emails just in as well from folks who have been watching their skies for quite a long time. Here's one from Vicki Bennett. Thank you, Vicki, here in southern Wisconsin. She says, we have had few chem days since mid-June of this year. In the last month, however, there have been about 3 days with moderately heavy activity. This further proves to me that it's just not contrails. What's the old saw? The exception proves the rule. And from E.J. Mack, Jeff, just wanted to inform you that we had confirmed chemtrail spraying in Atlanta, Georgia. The spraying started around 2 p.m. Eastern Time and continued until dark, spraying in all directions, and I personally counted 8 aircraft at one time. I also got confirmation from a family member that there was heavy chemtrail spraying or aerosol spraying in Cincinnati, Ohio. Just wanted to give you that report. Thank you, EJ, for that. My guest, Clifford Carnicom, his website can be accessed by clicking on his name at Rentz.com, or just remember, Carnicom, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M, Carnicom.com. Okay, Clifford.
Thank you, Jeff. The last comment I have on this predictive work, it's an ancillary observation, but not necessarily any less important, but not documented, let's say, from a rigorous scientific or analytical side, but I did want to mention it. And, you know, models also fail, and I'm the first one that needs to try and recognize when any models that I work with fail. And it's interesting that the last few days, especially over this last weekend, there were extremely heavy operations over this area. I was in Durango, and then I saw it up there and followed all the way through to Albuquerque and Santa Fe on the way back. And, you know, at the same time, the model I was just speaking to you of does not predict that at that level, let's say. That's a fair statement. So there is this question of, well, why or what happened in this time? What I want to do is mention an observation. You can call it intuitive, subconscious, but this issue of perceived threat of attack has caught my interest because I do remember many, many months ago, you know, there were some times when Albuquerque, which is the nearest city about 50 miles from me, population by, I guess, about 500,000 or so, Albuquerque was just hammered. And I was trying to figure it out at that time, and I noticed that the news, the general news of the climate and atmosphere of the news was that of a, let's say, heightened alert status for potential threats. And okay. I registered that. And then over the past several months, I just sort of have that in the back of my mind. And there's this interesting observation I made here in Santa Fe, and it regards the emergency broadcast system. Do you recall when we would always hear the emergency broadcast system come in, primarily on AM radio is where I always know it.
Sure.
But when you had the emergency broadcast come in, you would always have an announcement that the following is going to be a test. But you'd have a verbal announcement of the test, which was going to follow. Then you would have the test, mm-hmm. and then you would have a conclusion in a verbal form that mm-hmm. the test had been conducted.
Correct.
What has caught my interest over the past several months is that on AM radio here locally, without any explanation, without any introduction.
Without any announcement.
Any announcement whatsoever, you have the emergency broadcast system popping in.
I've heard that too, Clifford.
Yes. And what I'm suggesting is that I am noticing, it appears, that sometimes a pattern of heavy operations occurring at the times that I am hearing these unannounced emergency broadcasts, and that I will only suggest that it is worthy of investigating whether or not there may be a connection. And this is not all. This is also not far-fetched, as if we get through the conversation tonight, again, there are considerable crossovers and links between the various subjects that you and I have discussed. And the topic of, let's say, potential weapon systems electromagnetic applications, let's say,
okay,
may well cross over into the topic that I'm mentioning now. So I realize it is suggestive in nature, but nevertheless, I want to point out that I'm noticing a pattern, I believe, and it would be worthy of closer scrutiny. And
agreed. Good point. Interesting linkage, something to keep in mind.
Yes, and that would be between the existence of the operations and that perceived hostile threat, whether stated or not, which could be garnered through a variety of sources and or even intuition. If we want to allow to trust that, that's fine. But we'll suggest that possibility. And it may tie in, I suspect it will, if I can get through some of this other material. With all of those preliminaries finally being taken care of and an introductory topic, I will begin to introduce the primary subject of discussion tonight, which is electromagnetic applications and atmospheric electricity. Now, it is curious that when you and I had this discussion, whether it was a year ago or so, roughly in there, on this, to me, very important topic and has become increasingly important on the electromagnetic aspects of these, that particular interview, let's say, had the potential of showing censorship with it. We don't exactly know, but that particular interview had a strange way of disappearing for 2.5 months. And it was so far removed that you had efforts by citizens to transcribe that interview.
Uh-huh.
It took 2.5 months to get that all in place. And then on the day that the transcription was being posted on the site, the interview suddenly appeared as being okay. Now, it may all be coincidence, but whether it is or not, I guess I would stress that I believe the topic of electromagnetics is crucial and may be primary to this aerosol issue. And I will elaborate on that further tonight. We might need to recall some of the basic assumptions and premises that I had established from that earlier discussion with you.
Okay.
And that does include the determination, presumption, supposition, whatever you wish to call it, of a modified atmospheric state, which is of similar character to what is called a plasma.
Right.
A plasma is an electrically conductive gas. My thesis, which remains at this time, is that our atmosphere has been altered by the introduction of conductive particulate, metallic matter of extremely fine size, and that it does have the net effect of altering the electrical characteristics of the atmosphere in a highly significant way. That premise still holds as strong as the day that I introduced it to you a year or so ago. With that premise, I have rededicated myself to that topic over the past several months.
Mm-hmm.
And have been digging in at quite a deeper level than that primary premise. And what I'm going to do is describe some instruments and methods that I have been researching. And again, we have to understand I'm one person, I'm doing what I can, but you know, we could sure use some help on this work that's going on. It takes me months to get through this work, and we need faster progress. I have serious concern about the amount of time that we have in this country and the preservation of human and civil rights and liberties and our ability to, let's say, communicate and share information and confront the officials on the effects and consequences of what we have now become subjects to rather than participants of.
God only knows what clauses, amendments, and sleepers are hidden away in this homeland security legislation. We keep finding more and more things out each day that give all of us who care about this nation more and more to worry about.
The Constitution shows itself under great threat right now, and I hope people realize the efforts that need to be made to save it and to save our country. So what I'm going to do is describe some research projects. These are instruments, these are projects that I've worked on. I'm not a professional in all disciplines that there are in science. I do the best I can. Right now, I'm pretty heavily involved in electronics and electromagnetics and educating myself as best I can with my engineering background. I have sought some assistance, and there is, fortunately, some support has been received, and I want to give credit to that. There's one individual which has assisted in a very professional way on some electronic circuitry work that is ongoing. But realize this work, you know, it's not as though I can come here and say, this is the truth and this is the final word.
Sure.
What I can do is say, this is what I'm involved in. It's deep, heavy work, and we need help. And the sooner people will step up to the plate as professionals and contribute to this search for truth, the better off we'll be, instead of having an individual have to struggle through teaching themselves, you know, three dozen disciplines. At advanced levels.
And there are, as we take our break, some brilliant minds out there listening right now, Clifford, and hopefully they'll contact you in the days and weeks to come and offer some assistance. This is one man you're hearing from tonight who has done an incredible job at not only educating himself as to how to go about research, but then carrying through on that research and bringing it all to us at carnicom.com. Be right back. Okay, right back with you. Glad you're along. Clifford Carnicom's proposal, his theory, his thesis, that they are turning, have turned, portions of the lower atmosphere into a plasma state, a plasma tool, if you will, opens the door for a multitude of science fiction-like applications, not all of which have our best interests in mind. Clifford, go right ahead.
Thank you, Jeff, very much. What I'm going to do is I'm going to describe four instruments that I have developed and or worked with. I'm going to describe my findings from each of these instruments and also some of the difficulties that have arisen with their use, and subsequently an obvious call for additional assistance on each of these instruments. They can all be improved upon. They can all be developed further by those that are more knowledgeable in these affairs than I am. But I think that each one of them does serve as a useful starting point for throwing on the table certain issues which arise from their use and the observations that have resulted. These four instruments are... The first one is what would be called an electrometer, or in a more primitive form, it's called an electroscope. That particular instrument actually dates back to that last discussion we had on electromagnetics. If you recall, it's a while ago now, but the closing statement of my discussion on that instrument was, you know, the thing is paying off the scale right now, and I have no idea what's going on. And that's where it was left.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. The meter was giving readings that I could no longer interpret in any way. So that's one instrument. What I'll do is I'll mention them all, and I'll come back and go through each one, give some time to what has been learned from each one and the questions that arise from its use, and then try to bring in the significant, let's say, interpretation on a conceptual basis of the information that has resulted.
Okay.
The second instrument would be called a magnetometer. Admittedly quite crude, but nevertheless quite fascinating. and by the way, the purpose of these would have been helpful. An electrometer, an electroscope, is an instrument that can detect static electric charge. Now, static, it's helpful to know what that actually means. Static electricity means invariant with respect to time. That's helpful to take a minute and understand that what it means is an electrical field that is not changing with time. That is what a static electrical field, just as you can have a static magnetic field. These are not changing with respect to time, because time adds a whole different dimension to electromagnetics. So it's an instrument that can detect that, and the instrument I have is incredibly sensitive. It's quite fascinating to watch, and I mentioned this before. You can take a plastic comb, rub it through your hair, and this thing will detect the negative charges on that comb from not uncommon to have a distance of 8 feet away to move the comb and watch that meter react to it. So quite sensitive to electrical static charges. And by the way, an electroscope is a qualitative instrument, meaning relative information. An electrometer is an absolute device. And the truth is, I'm a little bit somewhere in between, is what I suspect with what I've created. I took what was originally an electroscope, which was a qualitative instrument with just a light, like an idiot light in an automobile. It just had a light on it, and then what I did was integrate a meter into that instrument to attempt to gain some quantitative information. So that's the purpose of an electrometer or an electroscope. The second one, a magnetometer, is a device which detects variations or magnitudes of the magnetic field. In specific interest here is the Earth's magnetic field. That's the purpose of the device. The HARP project, which, by the way, also will be increasingly mentioned in our discussions in terms of the technology, the HARP project in Alaska has a magnetometer on it. Many people are familiar with that, and that data can be viewed on their site. An expensive magnetometer is quite sophisticated, I'm sure, and can detect magnitude as well as variation. The one that I have created would be suitable only for detecting variations. It's a much more difficult problem, just as it is with the electrometer, to determine the absolute value of a magnetic field. It's much easier to try and detect the differences in the magnetic field. So that's the second instrument, and I'll describe them at least briefly, what they're made of. The magnetometer is amazingly simple, but quite fascinating to use also. The third instrument is a electronic circuit that attempts to measure the existence of extremely low frequency radiation.
Okay, well, that's what we commonly call ELF, and many of you are familiar with that term. We'll come right back and hear more about ELF and metering it with Clifford Carnicom. Lots of talk about HARP as well. This is a big issue, and briefly, HARP is an antenna farm in Alaska, and there are several other HARP-like installations, which pumps up through these large arrays tremendous amounts of electromagnetic energy into the ionosphere. And just to keep it real simple, we'll talk more about that. Got to run, running late, as we continue. Let's step right back into it with Clifford Carnicom, my guest tonight, and we're talking about some amazing things. Let's get right back to it, Clifford. ELF, extreme low frequency.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And the reason that I am talking about this, and we'll spend considerable time on this, is because I do think, it's not a matter of belief, I do think, based upon all of the analysis and evaluation that I have now devoted to this topic over the last 4 years, that electromagnetics is at the heart of the issue. And I wanted to make really more of a personal comment about the need for technical and intelligent work. I do have difficulties and problems sometimes with those of us who are afraid to confront problems that are of a technical nature.
Mm-hmm.
I know that life is much more interesting than just the technical world itself offers. I know that very well. But there are times when it is called for to devote ourselves to the solution of difficult technical problems. And it is very true in this case that we appear to be the subjects of a highly technical, complicated, covert operation. And if we as citizens are ever going to understand what we are subjected to, we need to apply ourselves and gain the knowledge at whatever effort, at whatever cost it takes, to learn the intricacies, the details, the technical aspects of what is being done.
And the option is to wait 50 years and hope that maybe someday in the future your grandkids will read in the newspaper one day that the government finally admitted it was doing all these things way back in the 1990s and the early turn of the millennium. Remember what just came out in the paper, folks, a week or two ago, that the military has admitted spraying nerve gas in the rainforest in Hawaii, just one of multiple admissions which have come out in the last couple of years. They'll wait, you see. They wait 10, 20, 30. Time is on their side. That's what Clifford is talking about.
You know, a weapon system that is based on technical excellence needs technical response in order to understand it. We have to understand what is being done so that it can be either some type of counter method can be developed. And unfortunately, now you are speaking of the citizens developing their own lines of defense against an unknown, unidentified adversary that is operating without their consent. Unfortunately, this is a state of affairs. And so I can only encourage people to not be afraid to confront the difficult problems and gain the knowledge. I can only ask for the professionals that have this knowledge to make their contributions towards the general welfare and to dismiss the fears that we commonly have for the purpose of understanding the greater cause of that of a democracy and this nation. So I realize those are my personal comments, but this whole business about dumbing down in this country is so severe that if you mention a number to somebody and you see their eyes glaze over, and sorry, folks, you know, but we're talking about some numbers on this stuff, and we mm-hmm. better learn what they are. So, you know, with that soapbox being committed, I suppose, I'll go on and mention these instruments that, you know, I confess are quite likely in an infant stage, but nevertheless, hopefully they can serve as stepping stones towards a continued investigation to learn the true mechanics and details of what is happening around us. I mentioned three instruments thus far. The first was an electrometer, purposes which is to measure the static electricity. My purpose was attempting to determine the electrical current flow in the atmosphere, since I believe that is significant. The second was the construction of a amazingly simple magnetometer that can effectively demonstrate measurable variations in the magnetic field. And by the way, magnetism and electricity are intricately related, and that's why these topics are being approached simultaneously. The third is a circuit that I found through my research that is constructed for the purpose of detecting extremely low frequency or ELF waves, as you have mentioned. These are potentially highly significant if they exist due to their impact upon biological systems, meaning us. The last one is also a ELF meter of an alternative sort and a completely different construction based on really a fundamental understanding of the topic of resonance. And the reason that the second one is important is because the findings that I have are significant and disturbing enough such that they need to be corroborated and confirmed. And the best that I can do right now is offer two completely different approaches and see if they lead to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'll talk about tonight. Now, what I will do is go through each of these instruments and tell you what I've learned. And it's also very important to acknowledge what we don't know or that which causes confusion in the matter.
Okay, let's do our break right now, okay. Clifford, and we'll come back and we'll have to be interrupted. Stand by as Clifford Carnicom is about to lay out some very vital information, his discoveries, his research, as we continue in just a couple minutes. Continue with Clifford Carnicom, aerosol spraying over America and over much of the world. 4 years in earnest, a deployed program, no longer a test and evaluation project. Go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you, Jeff, very much. The methods of construction of each of these instruments and devices that I am describing is on the website in detail. I am hopeful that others across the nation will duplicate and or especially improve upon and expand these instruments to see if similar results are being obtained on their end. The use of each of these instruments varies. Some of them are more difficult than others, and I understand that, but I do hope that people will have the patience to investigate each of them and approach each one which they feel is appropriate at their level of knowledge. The magnetometer is an extremely simple instrument and should be able to be constructed and understood by each, realizing this is a primitive magnetometer, but it does work. Some of them, the other one especially on this electrometer, have taxed everything I have had for several months to try and get an understanding of how to get some data out of that. An electrometer, as I want it, is apparently a very expensive instrument, not easy to come by. And what I have had to do is basically use mathematics to try and compensate for the lack of equipment and circuitry that I have and see if I can get usable results.
You're amazing, Clifford. I really salute you. It's amazing what you've done.
Thank you. That was a very toilsome project, I have to admit, and there's somewhat of an irony there because I spent many months to get to a solution. I do believe the solution offers some viable data. However, in the end, it is now seen that as a result of that work, the other instruments, particularly the ELF, may be a much more direct way of trying to get the information and much easier to use. The advantage of that process of struggle and toil through the mathematics of that particular problem was that along the way, I continue to educate myself on electromagnetics in general and electronics, which in the end pays off in the application to successive projects. So nothing was lost, although it has taken some time to realize the benefits of that work. What I'll do is describe, I don't have time, nor is it necessary for me in this discussion to go through the details of construction. I'll leave that for folks to look at the site and make their recommendations and revisions and this type of thing. What I will do is describe what I'm finding with each instrument and then acknowledge that there will be some contradictions, and that's what needs to be resolved, as well as what I'm finding, needs to be either confirmed or refuted, dismissed or expanded upon. Let's go through the electrometer first. My purpose on that was an attempt to measure the flow of atmospheric electrical current. Not an easy problem to get an actual value on. To give you an idea, this fellow Schaefer, who I mentioned before, who wrote a book on atmosphere, and he was the inventor of cloud seeding, he has a little section in his book on this topic. And if you were to just stick a wire up in the air on the end of a pole, the amount of current which is flowing through the atmosphere is so small that it would be literally impossible to measure. You're dealing with an incredibly small quantity to measure when you're dealing with atmospheric electrical current in the normal state.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting in his discussion of his device that he offers. I couldn't exactly duplicate what he's up to. I don't have that with me. I went another route. But it's very interesting in his discussion that he talks about if you do want to try to measure it with a wire, what will help you or what will work is to have a radioactive needle. And the reason that he's saying this is because it is ionized. In other words, if the air around the needle is ionized enough, then you have something that can be measured. It is very interesting that in the work that I'm doing, I am able to measure something. I'm using electronics, but the question of ionization has to come up as to whether or not that is a factor in the fact that I'm able to measure something, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
The fellow wants an ionized needle in order to get enough current to flow, in other words,
mm-hmm.
to measure.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the results, and these are I'll characterize these in a general way, and I'll try and admit to the things that are uncertain. First is that the fair weather current, that which is expected, they call fair weather current, is expected to be it's a hundredth, right? A hundredth of a microamp. Now, this is really small. It's all I can say. A microwave will use 12 amps. A hundredth of a microamp is an incredibly small number. If you go up higher in elevation, that number will increase, and I'm trying to be generous on my numbers. It would expect you would expect to read, it looks to me like roughly up to a tenth of a microamp. I quoted that number wrong to you, incidentally, on our first discussion. I had numbers of 5 microamps. It's not true. It's off by a factor of 10 or even 100. It's even smaller than I stated to you a year and a half ago. It's a very, very small number.
Mm-hmm.
If increase in elevation, I would expect you to get roughly a tenth of a microamp. On my meter, I'm getting half of a microamp. Now, I'm going to admit that I don't have absolute proof of my methods, but it's the best that I can do. And in the end, I'm not even going to use this information. I'm not going to base my results on determination magnitude, but I will mention that the magnitude I am getting is at the very least a factor of 5, if it's true, over what I would expect. It's also interesting in very early work that went on with a Van de Graaff generator that the spark distance that you get off of a Van de Graaff generator
mm-hmm.
can be used to estimate the electrical conductivity of the air. It's interesting that that Van de Graaff generator work a long, long time ago gave me a factor of roughly 4 in terms of increase in electrical conductivity.
Mm-hmm.
But the main point that I want to focus on the use of this electrometer that I have constructed is that it does appear to be valuable. Even if you dismiss magnitude, it appears to be valuable for detecting variation in electrical current. You see, in many quantities of nature, you have what's called a magnitude. You have a value of that quantity. But then that quantity changes. And sometimes, many, many times in nature and in life, the change in something is more valuable and gives more insight than the actual quantity itself.
Okay.
And that happens for many, many things in nature. And sometimes acquiring a magnitude on something is much more difficult than acquiring information about the change of something. That's where the science of calculus came from. It's an examination of change, and it's incredibly valuable and leads to many, many discoveries in the physical and mathematical world. Here are my findings thus far with the use of this instrument, and they actually do make sense. The first is that the variation at night, the change in the electrical current at nighttime, seems to be less than during the day. This would be one finding. If you start looking up on radio propagation for shortwave radio and that type of thing, that actually makes sense. The level of ionization in the atmosphere is apparently lower at night. I know at the upper regions it's higher. I'm talking about lower atmosphere. I'm talking about the ground. This is where I'm at. Apparently right before sunset, the ionization level is at its lowest, having decreased through the night. The next thing would be that during the daytime hours, let's call it a clear blue sky, the variation seems to increase. And there does seem to be a confirmation of my methods here, because there's a well-known physicist that I mentioned to you some time ago by the name of Feynman, and he just writes an excellent book on physics, and he has a chapter on this atmospheric electrical current. And one of the primary characteristics that he states about the atmospheric electricity is that you have greater variation during the daytime hours, surprisingly at a fixed time, actually. But there is a definite cycle, I guess is the point, to the variation of electrical current. It's a fundamental a physical characteristic of our world, this variation of electrical current, and it follows a predictable fashion, and it is therefore expressive of a cyclic event on a daily basis. It's on a daily basis in nature and our world around us. The other thing that it appears I can do with this meter is it appears as I can detect the effect from solar storms. Surprise me, but it appears to be sensitive enough to be able to detect the effect of solar storms. And it also appears to be able to detect the increase with respect to altitude. If you increase your elevation, the ionization will increase, and the conductivity of the atmosphere will also. I got to make sure I get that correct. There's a real important. I got to be careful on that because I got to use the words right. Call it this way: electrical current would increase as you. I'm going to hold it. Hold off. I'm going to say that the ionization level would increase as you go up in altitude.
Right.
And this meter appears to be able to detect that difference. I guess I'll state it that way. We have to be real careful in the use of that word conductivity. There's a technical difference there.
Okay.
So these are findings. Now, why is this important? The reason that it's important is that if I start looking at the behavior of the atmospheric electrical current when these aerosol operations are conducted, this is a crucial question. What happens? Is there any change, and is it detectable? It is an important fundamental question, and that is the reason that I'm doing this. I know it might be entertaining in some ways, but that's not the reason I'm doing it. I'm doing it because the question is, are these operations having an effect on our planet, and what is it? And this will be my result that I will state. And like I say, I'll admit the confusion that may also ensue from it.
Okay, about a minute until the break.
The finding appears to be, from the use of this instrument, is that the atmospheric electrical current appears to be being interfered with, is how I would say it.
Okay.
It appears to be being suppressed when the aerosol operations are being conducted. Now, there will be some contradictions in what I say later, and that's why I say we need some help. But it appears as though there is a level of interference occurring with the electrical flow in the atmosphere when the aerosol operations are underway.
Okay, got it. And the aerosol spraying, of course, contains particulates down to 0.2 micron, particulates of aluminum, barium, and other established elements as well. We'll come right back with more in just a few minutes after the top of the hour break with Clifford Carnicombe.